This is Friday, 19th of February, and we are starting the course Research Methods in Environmental Sciences. And it was supposed to start already 2 weeks ago, but unfortunately the university was closed, and this was the soonest possible time we could get access to the laboratories. And also the time for the laboratory was limited, so this is unfortunately very, very intensive and short course with a lot of tasks and works and instructions and interaction. But I hope we will manage, because this has been one of the first and few cases that we try to have some kind of contact teaching and lectures. Okay, this course is trying to continue this kind of environmental technology approach to solve the environmental problems by different kind of physical and chemical and biological unit operations. And all these cases has been not unfortunately covered by lectures. Usually we have had several courses dealing with these unit operations, like environmental technology, and then water supply and sanitation. Both of them were 5-credit unit courses, and only Benjamin has been taking these courses. Now we don't have these courses anymore. So this year I have taken this chemical coagulation, adsorption, isotherm and capacity measurement. Then ozonation, because with ozonation we are able to familiarize to the very important modeling parameters, like the half-life of compound X in environment, and also reaction rate constants, which are very important. And in the very end, hopefully we still can go and continue. The third week is very much around the soil contaminated by hydrocarbons, characterization of the soil parameters, and analyze of the different kind of hydrocarbons with standard methods. And then we also can try some treatment methods in order to test what Christina is going to continue her master thesis later on this spring and summer. Okay, there will be video lecture of all these introductory lectures for each of the work, but I think I must to highlight first the safety instructions in the laboratory. I think all of you have taken and passed the course laboratory safety. I think it is obligatory for first year students. And besides of the normal laboratory safety instructions, please remember that most important risk this year is all these rules which deals with the protecting ourselves against COVID-19. So if you have some flu, please go to test and please wear masks, gloves, white coats, All of them are available in the laboratory. Please try to keep distance, but it's very difficult to keep 2 meters distance if you work together. And that's why it's very important that you listen this introductory material in advance, because I try to explain everything by video, not in front of the group, because speaking is the most effective way to spread the viruses. Fortunately, this year the laboratory exercises doesn't contain any hazardous chemicals or any microorganisms, pathogens. The most dangerous compound is sulfuric acid, I think. And we are dealing with boiling water. These are the actual hazards, but the other hazards are general ones, beware sharp glassware, electrical safety, and so on. And if something goes wrong, of course, in the case of emergency, you can call to the 112. But if you run out of the reagent or something like that, you can call me. I should be around, but also Emma and Mervi, you can call them, and they know much better. For example, if we run out of some chemicals or supplies. Each laboratory experiments follows by the normal writing of a report. It is very short one, no long stories, a very, very short introduction what you are doing, and principle, and then materials and methods. You describe the reagents and equipment and methods. And then when you do the measurement or experiments, please also include the original data, the measurements data, all the calculations what are used, and then results as tables and graphical forms. And then finally, discussion of the results and possible source of errors. And hopefully you can submit them in 2 weeks, but I can't be flexible because, yes, I know that this course is extremely, extremely busy. And there will be a small exam after the course. This lecture is divided to 2 parts. First one relates to the coagulation and flocculation phenomenon in order to in our case, use this technology for the remediation of environment, wastewater treatment, drinking water treatment. But there are also uncountable application outside of the environmental technology application. These operations are used also in food sciences and generally in process industry. The idea of this coagulation, saustus, is to somehow to force our dissolved or colloidal matter, what is in the liquid, floating there. We want to force the dissolved molecules or colloidal matter, small particles, to form some suspended matter, Kiintoaine, which can be separated from the water. It's sinking on the bottom, or then it's so light that we can introduce air bubbles and force the suspended matter to float on the surface and build this stuff on the surface. And the most common application so far has always been this drinking water treatment and the removal of natural organic matter, bacteria, and turbidity from the raw water. But since we haven't had this course which is dedicated for drinking water treatment, and we don't go through the unit operations and the whole line of the combination of different kind of unit operations, we go this coagulation of turbidity of humic matter in the little bit wider scale, not only dedicated to the drinking water treatment, but also let's say that we will arrange this setup that we could also use this method for the let's say removal of turbidity, nutrients, phosphorus, heavy metals from runoff water, hulevesi, or for example exactly this method what we use has been used for the chemical treatment of the water coming from the peat production area, which means a very robust chemical coagulation. And also, whenever you introduce metals, in Finland, most commonly iron, to the water bodies, there is this kind of interaction with humic matter and metals, irons, and spontaneous precipitation of humic matter into the bottom of the lake and making this mud in sediment. Of course, that process is much slower and the concentrations are much lower, but the principle is very same. And for example, Anssi Vähätalo has made several masterly theses and scientific papers. Then there was a one Chinese PhD students who made her thesis about the interaction of iron and humic matter in lake waters. So in previous courses we have studied this application in details, but now you just please believe me that this is really common method. And And besides of those applications I mentioned to you, for example, chemical coagulation precipitation can also take place in the wastewater treatment of the private houses when the phosphorus in the small wastewater treatment plant is arranged by adding a small amount of iron chemical into the septic tank. So these all are some kind of application of this unit operation. What actually happens in the precipitation? It's very difficult to separate. I have tried to understand something like almost 40 years what is going on actually on the molecular level. So it is something what is chemical in the beginning, but later on what happens for these flocks and group of chemicals and how they colloid each other and make bigger flocks. It goes to into the area of physical unit operation, and particularly when we start to separate this suspended matter from the liquid, it is a physical unit operation. But anyway, we just want to get rid of something what is in the liquid form in order to push it in the suspended matter and then collect it each by different techniques. So I mentioned already the most important applications of this coagulation, and at least these are the some of the most common, and the whole drinking water treatment by using the surface water is very much based on the chemical coagulation, because all over the world there is some amount of turbidity, mineral particles, clay particles, and a lot of bacteria, which is one group of particles which is producing turbidity. So in the other countries, the most important role of the chemical treatment is the removal of turbidity and microorganisms, parasites from the wastewater, the drinking water. But when we are in Finland or in Canada or Scotland, in those countries where this humic matter is a big issue, so the removal of an optimization of chemical coagulation takes place in order to remove humic matter. So it requires special pH and special dose of coagulants, and if you want to do the optimization, the optimum to removal of turbidity and humic matter are not actually the same. But this is something the removal of humic matter what is familiar for the Finnish persons. I will make a link to a handbook made by Kemira. It's an extremely useful electrical book, and since they put it in the internet, it means that I think everybody can use it. And it's really practical and easy to understand and read, because it deals the optimization of chemical treatment of drinking water and wastewater. So this is the problem in Finnish surface waters. We are going to have a different kind of as brown as possible. Before we have had Jyväsjärvi and Tuomiojärvi here in Jyväskylä, but organic matter content in those lakes are about 10 milligrams of total organic carbon. And sometimes we have just spiked a little bit humic matter from Ansivahatalo stock in order to make this phenomenon more obvious. And the idea of the coagulation is to take this raw water, add first salt, which is usually aluminium, but nowadays iron salt is becoming more and more common and popular in the drinking water treatment in Finland. Calcium salts can be added, but the amount of the sludge is quite huge, and also there might be some other chemicals, metals that might be suitable for coagulation, but for the practical reasons, these three are the most common because they are cheap, they are safe, widely available, yes. The first step is to add the coagulant into the raw water in mixing tank, stir it, and then happens this flocculation phase. After the very, very strong mixing, couple of seconds, you are sure that you have get a very, very effective mass transfer of your added chemical. You reduce the speed of mixing and let just some small gentle energy for the system in order that these small flocks which are formed get some extra kinetical energy in order to colloid each other and make bigger flocks, and then settle either down on the bottom of the tank, like in our experiment, or then nowadays this dissolved air flotation has become the major way to get rid of this humic matter sludge, because it's really compact and quick way to remove these flocks. And in reality, this settling of the small particles what we have been able to create is not 100%, so it is followed by sand filtration in order to remove the residual small particles. And also, if there are some cryptosporidium spores, also they have to be removed in the filter bed. And then in nowadays in Finland, the conventional drinking water treatment contains activated carbon filtration, at least ozonation quite often, UV treatments, but this used to be the most common method of the drinking water treatment, but nowadays this doesn't guarantee the high quality of the water what is required nowadays. So it needs to be still polished, for example by ozonation, what we are going to do. So our aim is to simulate the situation that you are planning water work where you want to get rid of the humic matter and turbidity from the water, By using the aluminium and iron salts, we might try both of them and then compare which one is better and more effective. And what happens into the process, God knows what actually happens, but this is the reaction, the chemical reaction, what takes place in the drinking water treatment. And as you can see that in drinking water treatment, this optimal removal of particularly humic matter requires also hardness, calcium bicarbonate hardness, in order to be effective, and also to avoid the decrease of pH to acidic level, which would take place without this addition of calcium or lime in the process. But this is very, very sophisticated chemistry, but still very robust chemistry, complicated chemistry, and that's why you can never know by the book or by some table what is the amount of the required chemical. So you have to do it by experiments and that's why this kind of char tests are extremely popular and whenever the sale person coming from the usually Kemira is the biggest producer of the water treatment chemicals in the world. They will come and measure the parameters of your raw water and what is the capacity? What is the capacity of the water treatment plant? They do this treatment in the laboratory with this very similar experiments, with the very similar experimental procedure, which is also described in that handbook, what I'm going to link into the site. So in our laboratory, we would like to see very dramatic, very nice formation of humic matter. So this we might add some concentrated humic material provided by Vapo or and Silenzo, or also I have a stock of different waters from Sotkamo, which are quite dark already by nature. And since the turbidity in the lake water in Finland is very, very low compared to the waters all over the world. And if you want to see some turbidity in our experiment, sometimes we add some artificial turbidity as a form of kaolin. So we could also monitor the removal of the small particle turbidity, but that has to be added into our raw water. So the char test, this is the recipe to make drinking water, and because we don't want to have acidic drinking water, and we want to know that our process is in optimum pH. So the first step in the proper drinking water treatment optimization is to measure the optimum pH for the chemical coagulation. But that would double the time of the experiments, and it's quite boring. And that's why I have done that. And we can skip the first part of the experiment because I will tell you that what is the pH that works best. And this is the picture of this jar tests. You have six parallel 1 liter at flasks, and then you will add to each of these flasks a different amount of aluminium or iron sulfate solution. And the solutions are selected so that the lowest concentration of the solution is not enough to obtain the effective coagulation, and then the highest concentration is too much, and in fact you are not only wasting the expensive coagulant, but also if you put too much salt, it means also the risk of suspension of this already precipitated chemical. So there will be always an optimal dose for the pH and for the organic matter in the water. And this is something what I have already done. And depending on the water, sometimes it has been 5.6, sometimes it has been 6.2, but I will do that on Sunday. And then you will adjust the pH of the stock raw water to some level, and Emma are going to measure the concentration of organic matter already in the water, so we can get a rough estimation of the required dose of the chemical coagulant. And this comes from previous years that the suitable range of the for example, aluminium sulfate solution has been from 10 to 66 grams of aluminium sulfate per liter. And before you do anything, you adjust the pH, and then like this, I will check, or Emma will check, that what is the best turbidity or best pH for the raw water what you are going to use next week. And yes, then this is the way to adjust the pH at a little bit lower. Usually the raw water from the lake is something like 6.5, 6.7, so a little bit more acidic for the optimal precipitation. Then you have a six parallel flask full of slightly acidic raw water. And then as soon as possible, you will inject the required dose, volume of the solution, aluminium or iron sulfate solution, and then switch on the mixer, and for 10 seconds you will mix the flask or the container with full speed, and after this initial period you will slow down the mixing for half an hour, and after half an hour you you will shut down the mixing totally and wait for half an hour and let the suspended brown stuff, small particles, to settle down on the bottom of the jar flask, and then you will take the sample from the liquid to measure pH, turbidity, color, chemical oxygen demand by potassium permanganate method, and then give also a small dose of the treated water to Emma, who is going to run the dissolved organic carbon value by herself, and then you can have several parameters which actually measure the very same thing, the concentration and occurrence of organic matter in the water. And then of course turbidity is something different, but all color, UV absorbance, potassium permanganate value, and that total organic carbon, they all measured organic humic matter in the water. And the turbidity, there is a small device, and I will introduce an extremely easy to use, to fill just a tube of the water, and then the equipment tells you the turbidity of the sample. Then also you measure also the color with UV 254, which means that you measure the amount of the conjugated double bonds. Or you can also measure the color with 400 nanometers, which is the wavelength of the brown color. And then the results, what you should get. For example, turbidity. You have a different dose, and it should look like that the smallest dose is not enough, and then you can find the optimum concentration of the solution. And any further addition of this aluminium or iron sulfate doesn't improve, or they will they decrease the efficiency. So you will take the most lowest dose. For example, here, this is from the previous year, and for example, we have had a raw water, and we have had the different aluminium sulfate solutions, and as you see, 66 milligrams of aluminium sulfate is enough to remove turbidity, color, COD, and potassium permanganate. And there's no sense to increase the dose after that. So, and then you will write the work report, something short theory, of the what you are doing, and and what is very very nice nowadays that it's so easy to take these photos by cellular phone, so you can skip quite many steps by taking just a picture what you were doing actually, what different measurements you have done. So and and I also include the general instruction how to write laboratory report, and you can follow the general instructions of the report writing. Okay. Do you have any questions?
Well, I could ask that, are we supposed to write the report in Finnish or in English?
In Finnish, no necessary, except that this result, this group where Ali do is, then it would be necessary to use English. But you can also use English if you want. I have noticed that, for example, in the exam, you prefer to have English instead of Finnish. Even Finnish is totally allowed. And instructions for the removal. So there should be also like a written description of all these experimental setups and steps. And the most laborious work is to keep record what you are doing. And the other analyses like a color or turbidity, pH, they are pretty quick to do. But then there is this determination of potassium permanganate CO. It is this takes time. So more than half of the time is dedicated for boiling and making this experiment, because for the traditional reasons, this potassium permanganate COD has always been the most important and common method for the optimization and analyze of humic matter in water, in drinking water and in the lake water. Because in the good old times, we didn't have any DOC analyzers or HPLCs or anything like that. So the only thing what you need here is a boiling water and sulfuric acid and potassium permanganate, what is not hazardous. In fact, potassium permanganate is even added to the drinking water sometimes in order to remove manganese from the raw water. So you actually are sometimes drinking a small amount of the potassium permanganate, or you can use it also flushing the wounds and so on as a medication. So the risk here is that you burn yourself. But it is, and then calculation of the potassium permanganate consumption, And this is useful exercise because it gives you the routine of titration. Probably you have been doing the titration and titrimetric analyze sometimes. Sometimes if you have had chemistry laboratories, but otherwise perhaps not so much anymore, but there you have a possibility to do this very, very typical potassium permanganate titration with sodium disulfate, a very classical experiment. Please read advance all the steps. Okay. And I think I was reading this. I was reading these instructions and I just noticed that okay, I have a wrong kind of TOC analyzer, so I have to. We don't have this Shimatsu anymore, but anyway, you just do the filtration to the tube and give it to Emma, and Emma will give you the results after 1 week, and that's it. But if you stay on the department and continue, so you have to also to learn to use these TOC analyzers by yourself. But usually the students don't do that. Okay. That was the first. That was the first exercise. It will take a little bit longer. If you start after lunch, about 11 o'clock, it might take more than 5 hours. It depends on how familiar you are with the titration, because the titration will take time. Otherwise, the other steps are pretty quick. The adjustment of the pH takes some time because pH meter, it takes a little bit time when you can get the reading from the pH electrodes, but otherwise the other steps are very quick, and the chemical coagulation experiment takes little bit more than 1 hour itself, but the determination of COD. Yeah. And Emma and I will be there around in order to assist you in the